and her chest seemed to expand. Lieutenant Baronato, please stop trying to talk to me. I understand that General Cruz specifically requested you here, but while I am under orders to allow you access to my unit, I have received no orders that force me to talk to you. Go away. Transcript of raw footage of interview of Lieutenant Emily Baronato, Colonial Marines, J Company, conducted by Nicole Kajila. Nicole sat in the patio behind a huge barricade that Rashad and Washington had constructed. She was next to Stepanyan, who was covered in horrid burns from the acid blood spewed by the creatures, whatever they were. They were the only ones left. At first, there had just been the thing that exploded from Baronato's chest, but then more appeared. Nicole had no idea where they'd come from, but they overwhelmed the base within a day. Rashad looked at Washington. How much you got left?
3 clips, and the flamethrower still in good shape. Then Rashad turned to Nicole.
How's Step?
Nicole shuddered.
He doesn't look good. Motherfuck! What are these damn things?
I don't know, Nicole said, but the company knew about them and kept it from Pradyuman and the others. Nicole shuddered. Stepanyan and Little D had gathered the expedition team in the mess hall, and they'd wound up trapped there by the creatures. The sergeant was the only one to get out alive, and at that, he'd been crispy fried by acidic blood. The monsters had picked off the rest of the Marines one by one. Then Nicole said,
Do you know what happened to Sue?
He's dead like everyone else, Washington muttered.
Did he make it to the communication room? He was supposed to send a message. The fuck point is there in a message? Rashad asked. Ain't nobody gonna hear shit for 2 weeks. By the time they even know we in trouble, we'll be dead. Because they have to know, Nicole said. This is why I was sent on this assignment, don't you get it? The company knew about these things, and they didn't tell Prothuman's people or you guys.
Rashad shook his head.
Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I got no fucking clue. And the comm room's got a big-ass hole in it that Sue and Big D made. Took out 6 of them fuckers with them, for all the good it did.
Washington was staring down at his motion detector, and he suddenly cried out,
They're coming!
Nicole reached over to Stepanyan's holster and removed the pistol.
I'm sorry, Step. Guess it really was your last mission.
She got up and stood next to Washington, taking the safety off the pistol. Washington looked down at her.
You know how to use that?
We'll find out, won't we? He snorted.
Yeah. Guess I ain't gonna get that novel finished, huh?
Nope. She aimed the weapon over the barricade. I just hope Sue was able to get my last story out.
Me.
So what's the novel about? Private Washington.
Well, it's about these 2 people who meet for the first time on Luna. And then they get separated when her parents get reassigned to Earth, and they both live crazy lives, only to find each other again when they're both in their 90s, and they pick up where they left off.
Me.
So it's a love story?
Private Washington.
Kind of.
Transcript of raw footage of interview with Private Malik Washington, Colonial Marines, J Company, conducted by Nicole Kajila. Hiromi Hasegawa read over the transmission that had been sent from LV-418 2 weeks ago directly to her queue. The sender code belonged to the Colonial Marines, but the ID was Nicole Kajila's. Based on what she read, Nicole was probably dead, along with the rest of J Company, but not before she uncovered the story of the century. The files appended to the message proved once and for all that Weyland Yutani had deliberately hidden the existence of xenomorphs on LV-418. Hiromi shook her head. I knew you were talented, Nicole. Well done. Then, she deleted the entire message. She put a call through to General Emilio Cruz on his personal line. Cruz was in the Philippines right now, so it was 4 in the morning, and he'd probably be asleep. Sure enough, in a bleary voice, Cruz asked,
Hiromi, do you know what time it is?
Yes, Emilio, I am fully cognizant of the time, but I didn't think you'd want to wait to hear that I was right. Weyland Yutani didn't cover their tracks well enough. One of my reporters almost exposed the xenomorphs on LV-418. Cruz's eyes went impossibly wide, and sweat already was starting to bead on his forehead.
Are you?
Calm yourself, Emilio. I've already killed the story, and the xenomorphs have done the same for my reporter, and J Company, by the way. Waving an arm, Cruz said,
I'm sure they died heroically. It's what they're supposed to do.
He blew out a breath.
Good work, Hiromi. I'll let the Weyland Yutani Board of Directors know. I'm sure they'll compensate you well for this information, as usual.
Good, she smiled. Sleep well.
Empty Nest by Brian Keene. When Lance Corporal Lombardo finally found the hive, the woman seemed more terrified of him than of the aliens swarming around her. She knelt there in the nest, trembling amidst hatched eggs, desiccated facehugger carcasses, and the cocooned corpses of her crewmates. She gaped at Lombardo, eyes wide, her mouth a taut circle, screaming without sound. Lombardo knew how she felt. Just a few minutes ago, he'd been screaming too. In truth, he'd been screaming for the last hour, pretty much from the moment their platoon had landed on Taurus 7. So had everyone else in the 2 deployed rifle squads. In fact, the only people not screaming were Commander Moffey, Lieutenant Kennedy, and the synth technical advisor Dylan, all of whom were safe back on the UD-4 dropship, and Thomas, the platoon's other synth, who was currently ensconced in the driver's seat of the M577 armored personnel carrier parked outside. Lombardo knew they weren't screaming, because their voices echoed sporadically in his helmet's headset, demanding status updates, or, more accurately, wondering just what the hell was happening inside the supply depot. The fact was, Lombardo didn't know what the hell was happening. He'd heard the other rifle squad's screams over the headset, same as his command had heard. There had been no contact with the other squad since then. He suspected they had been killed, probably in all manner of horrible ways. The only thing he knew for sure was the rest of his own squad. Blasi, Heimbach, and Antonio were dead. Their blood was splattered all over his body armor. He could have reported their fate back to the dropship, but that would have left less time for screaming. He glanced from the woman to the xenomorphs, and then back to the woman again. Neither she nor her captors moved. The nest occupied what had formerly been the air filtration control room, located in the center of the supply depot, accessible only by a narrow service tunnel and a hatch-like door. Lombardo stood in the doorway, puffing out his chest and shoulders in an attempt to fill the hatch frame and make himself appear larger and braver than he really was. Right now he felt neither of those things. He was scared and nauseous and jittery from the adrenaline coursing through him. His M41A pulse rifle had never felt heavier than it did at this moment. He desperately wanted to glance behind him, just to verify that no alien was creeping along the corridor, but he was afraid to take his eyes off the ones in front of him. The control room was dark, and there was movement in the shadows, just out of clear sight. Obviously, more aliens lurked in the darkness, impossible to discern due to their muted black and blue coloring. He caught a glimpse of a massive egg sac hanging from the ceiling, suspended by a thick, strong, organic resin. The presence of the sac meant there was an alien queen hiding somewhere in the room. Luckily for him, The queen's mobility would be limited due to the sheer weight of the sack. They remembered that from training. The queens couldn't move while the sack was attached to them. She'd be dependent on her drones. Lombardo turned away from the shadows and focused on what he could see instead. He counted 4 visible combatants plus the woman. She looked rough. Of course, anyone who had been captured by a hive of xenomorphs would appear that way. But this was something else. She looked sick. Lombardo judged the woman to be in her 40s. She was beautiful, despite the grime and blood, but too skinny. Her clothes hung from her frame. Her hair seemed thin and limp, and her skin was like alabaster, almost glowing in the darkness. A series of ugly purple bruises covered her arms and neck. He wondered why she wasn't cocooned like the rest of the Supply Depot staff. The woman offered no explanation. She just continued to stare at him. The xenomorphs did the same, as if awaiting a command. The silence was somehow more unnerving than the aliens themselves. "I'm not getting paid enough for this shit," he muttered. "Say again, Lombardo." Thomas's emotionless synth voice sounded even colder when channeled through the headset. "Can't talk right now," Lombardo whispered. The aliens responded to his voice, skittering and hissing. They glanced at each other, tilting their cylindrical elongated heads, and then turned back to him. It was clear they were communicating, but Lombardo wondered how. They had no facial features, save for their horrific mouths, no eyes or ears, and while they could screech and hiss, it didn't sound like a language to him. So how were they able to communicate? Was it telepathy? Some sort of pheromone? Or maybe the clicking and hissing sounds they made really were some sort of fucked-up language? He wondered if a xenomorph could scream, and what that might sound like. His thoughts returned to the rest of his squad. Heimbach had been the first to fall, barely 5 minutes after they'd entered the depot, impaled through the back by a xenomorph's bladed tail, which had punched through his M31 pattern personal armor like a knife through a swath of cheesecloth. Lombardo frowned, recalling the big speech their commander had given them about the armored vest, how the manufacturer, Armat Battlefield Systems, had specifically designed it for use when engaging in combat with xenomorphs, how it was supposed to be lightweight and comfortable, while still offering maximum protection, how it was manufactured with layers of titanium and boron carbide resin, bonded to graphite composite carbon fiber, how it could withstand bullets, shrapnel from grenades and explosives, lasers and energy blasts, how it had been coated with an acid-resistant compound, specifically to protect against the alien's toxic blood, and how none of that had fucking mattered when that tail speared Heimbach and lifted him up off the floor. He tried to scream, but when he opened his mouth, blood poured out. Instead, he dropped his rifle and grasped at the slick, blue-black appendage jutting from his body. Then, with one whiplash move, the creature had flicked its tail, sending Heimbach crashing into a bulkhead. Quivering and sobbing, he died trying to shovel his intestines back into his abdomen. Lombardo shuddered at the memory. They suspected that somebody from the Colonial Marine Corps should see about getting a refund from Armat Battlefield Systems. Blasi had died next, mere seconds after Heimbach's demise. Despite all their training and their previous encounters with the aliens, he'd panicked and done the one thing you were never supposed to do when fighting a xenomorph in close quarters, opening fire with his M56 smart gun while the creature stood just a few feet away from him, Heimbach's blood still dripping from its tail. Blasi shouted curses, grinning as the rifle shook in his hands. The corridor had thrummed with the vibrations. The huge weapon shredded the alien where it stood, smashing through the monster's carapace, severing appendages and pulping its innards. Deafened by the noise, their ears ringing, Lombardo and Antonio barely had enough time to scurry backward out of range before a rain of acidic blood fell like mist, enveloping the still cursing Blasi. His enraged cries quickly turned to screams as the lethal substance went to work on his exposed skin. Lombardo had to give the folks at Armat Battlefield Systems credit. That special acid-resistant compound had worked like a charm. The liquid toxin slid harmlessly off of Blasi's helmet, vest, boots, and padding. But the rest of him sizzled and bubbled as the alien's corrosive blood melted him alive. The corridor filled with the combined stench of burning meat and something that had reminded Lombardo of the way the air smelled just before a thunderstorm. An electric tang. The M-56 slipped from Blasi's grasp. Blind and fumbling, he reached for Lombardo and Antonio, mewling helplessly as his face sloughed off, revealing the pitted, smoking musculature beneath. His eyes boiled in their sockets. The flesh on his hands dripped like hot wax. When he opened his mouth to scream, Lombardo noticed in horror that his tongue was dissolving. Blasi took one step toward them, before toppling to the floor and exploding with the consistency of an overripe pumpkin. Steaming chunks of him splattered across the bulkheads, leaving behind a noxious reddish-pink stew. But Antonio's screams, those had been the worst of all. It was fair to say that both men had collectively lost their shit after seeing Heimbach and Blasi slaughtered in such a gruesome fashion. Neither Lombardo nor Antonio were strangers to combat. Both had been witness to, and participants in, the horrors of war. They'd battled lone xenomorphs a half dozen times, been involved in riot control on Rigel 9, squashed the terrorist attacks on both the LaSalle Bio-National Space Station and the Europa Reclamation Project, put down the rebel uprising on New Titan, and fought in numerous skirmishes during the silent war between Weyland-Yutani and the Globe Corporation. Despite all that, they'd panicked after one xenomorph had dispatched two of their fellow squad members in such a quick and grisly fashion. It was one thing to see your friend, a friend you'd known since basic training, get shot or blown up. It was quite another to watch them be turned into soup. Lombardo and Antonio had pushed ahead, going further into the supply depot, ignoring the conflicting commands shouted over their headsets. They charged on, breathless, fueled by adrenaline and fear, gunning down anything that moved, and a few things that hadn't. They didn't stop until they found the cafeteria, and then it was only to check their weapons and gear and catch their breath. "You okay?" Lombardo had asked. "Fuck no," Antonio replied. "I've got Blasi all over my boots, and you've got a little bit of Heimbach on your nose." Scowling, Lombardo wiped his nose with the back of his hand. When he looked down, his hand was smeared with blood. "Did I get all of it?" Antonio shrugged. "Now it looks like you've got war paint." Lombardo glanced around the cafeteria, checking the corners. "This is fucked." "I remember when we were all recruits," Antonio had replied. "Heimbach enlisting to get that Weyland grant money, and Blasi all patriotic and shit." "And you and me," Lombardo agreed. "That judge gave us the choice, remember?" Antonio had nodded. "Life in prison, or life as a colonial marine. But I never thought." His words were drowned out by a loud metallic clang, and then a xenomorph yanked him up into a ventilation shaft in the ceiling. Lombardo couldn't tell how big the creature had been. All he'd seen was a blue-black blur of movement, and Antonio's legs kicking and thrashing as he was jerked upward. Then both vanished from sight, and the sounds began. The ventilation shaft echoed with thuds and bangs, and Antonio screamed. The alien hissed and warbled, and Antonio shrieked. Then there was a soft crunching sound, and Antonio squealed. One long, high-pitched, muffled plea, wordless and yet communicating all of the pain and fear in the world. It ended abruptly, and then there was silence. Blood dripped from the ventilation panel. Lombardo had pointed his rifle at the ceiling, thumbed the selector from single shot, past four-round burst, and all the way to fully automatic, and then opened fire. The ceiling disintegrated, panel by panel. His arms grew numb from the significant recoil, and his chest began to ache, but he kept shooting. The xenomorph's carcass tumbled into a cafeteria table, leaking toxic blood all over the ceramic surface. He kept shooting, the readout on the side of his weapon dutifully counting how many shots he had remaining. He didn't stop until the ceiling collapsed upon him. Coughing, He had crawled out of the wreckage and stood up. His ears rang, and the room was filled with swirling dust. He found what was left of Antonio, but it was impossible to determine how he had died. All Lombardo had to go on were the Marine's final screams. He heard ghost echoes of those screams now, standing here in the hatchway, facing off against the xenomorphs in the air filtration control room. "We should have picked life in prison," he muttered. One of the aliens inched forward, creeping toward him. Its talons clicked like hailstones on the steel-grated floor. Lombardo knew from previous briefings that while xenomorphs primarily preferred solitary ambush tactics, they would occasionally swarm when in larger groups. His previous encounters with them had always been with no more than one lone creature. Luckily, the other three aliens held their positions, seemingly content to let the lead xenomorph proceed. The creature took another step and chittered softly in its throat. Its segmented blade-tipped tail swished slowly back and forth. Lombardo cringed, remembering once again what one of those tails had done to Heimbach. "That's far enough," he gestured with his M41A. "You stay right where you are, Smiley." Ignoring him, the xenomorph inched closer. Judging by its body language, the creature was gearing itself to charge. The other three also shifted positions, perhaps emboldened by their companion's cautiously aggressive behavior. It appeared to Lombardo that they were trying to flank him, a move that would prove unsuccessful given his current placement in the hatchway. "Stupid fucking bugs. You need to brush up on your tactics." His voice echoed back to him, sounding very small. Lombardo breathed deep, trying to steady himself, and smelled his friend's remains drying on his armor. The woman was still staring at him. Lombardo did his best to sound reassuring, even though he felt anything but. "Don't worry, ma'am. It's going to be okay." Slowly, she shook her head back and forth and mouthed, "No." He stepped backward. The xenomorphs edged closer. He took another step, and they did the same. "That's right, you shitbags. Follow me." Keeping his eyes on the enemy, he whispered into his helmet microphone. "Thomas, you still there?"
"I'm here," the synth confirmed. "Just waiting on you, Lombardo."
"Command, you still on the line too?"
"That's affirmative, Lance Corporal," Commander Muffy replied. "What's your status?"
"My squad is dead. Looks like I've got one civilian still alive."
"And the rest of the civilians?"
"Still cocooned," Lombardo reported.
"And their status? The atmospheric feedback is playing havoc on our sensors. Can't read their life signs."
"They're all dead," Lombardo lied, hoping like hell that he wouldn't get caught. He didn't want to stay here any longer than necessary.
"Like I said, just one survivor. A woman. Requesting permission to fall back immediately, sir."
"Do you have the woman with you?"
"Not yet. I'm working on it."
Lombardo paused when he was about halfway down the maintenance tunnel. He kept his weapon pointed at the open hatch and thumbed the selector back down to the notch for four-round bursts. One by one, the aliens stepped into the tunnel, creeping warily forward in single file. They didn't rush him, obviously suspecting some sort of trap. He waited until they reached a point where both he and the woman would be out of the splash range of their blood, and then inched his finger just in front of the rifle's magazine, where a second trigger was loaded. He squeezed it, lobbing his last grenade. The rifle jumped in his hands. The projectile swang from the underbarrel and arced toward the clustered aliens.
"Get down!"
Lombardo shouted, dropping and rolling, hoping that the woman understood that he was talking to her. The xenomorphs shrieked, and then the sound was lost beneath a concussive whoomp. Lombardo's ears popped. The tunnel shook. He rolled to a stop, sprang to his haunches, and raised his rifle. There was a smoking hole where the aliens had stood only a moment before. Acid blood dripped from twisted metal. Debris and severed body parts filled the corridor. The tunnel, however, was still structurally sound.
Or at least he hoped it was.
Springing to his feet, Lombardo worked his jaw, trying to get the pressure in both ears to subside. When he reached the debris, he cautiously stepped around the still sizzling pools of acid and took care not to brush up against any of the metal shards. Then he re-entered the air filtration control room. The woman lay on the floor face down, hands over her ears, quivering. Lombardo started to call out to her, but then realized she was probably just as temporarily deaf as he was. Instead, he crept forward, eyes darting around, watching for any further aliens. The shadows were empty now. Perhaps the explosion had scared them away. He swept his rifle back and forth, tense and ready. Still, nothing moved. He hurried over to the victim, still cowering on the floor, and reached out a hand. "Are you okay? Can you stand?" The woman didn't respond, or even look up at him. Lombardo tapped her on the shoulder. She jerked her head up, gaping at him, her expression crazed. She began to scurry backward, crab-walking across the metal grating. Lombardo pointed his rifle barrel at the ceiling and held up his other hand, palm out. "It's okay," he yelled. "I'm here to help you. We responded to the distress call." She paused, blinking. When she spoke, he could barely hear her over the ringing in his ears. "The grenade," he pointed at his ear. "I can't hear you. Are you hurt?" The woman blinked again, and then pointed to her own ears. Shaking his head, Lombardo held out his hand. She stared at it as if he were offering her a dead fish. Then, slowly, she took it. Her palm was cold. Grunting, he pulled the woman to her feet. She wobbled back and forth unsteadily, grasping her abdomen. "Easy," he shouted, close to her ear. "Just take it slow. Can you walk?" She nodded. "Great," he thought. "At least we can hear each other now." "I'm Lance Corporal Michael Lombardo, Colonial Marines. What's your name?" She paused for a moment, licking her lips and glancing around the room. Then she focused on him again.
"Alice."
"Okay, Alice. Are there any other survivors that you know of?" He hoped she'd say no. Alice shook her head.
"Just me. Everyone else. They hatched already."
Lombardo realized that he could hear her more easily now. The ringing in his ears had subsided. "You're lucky I got here when I did," he said. "I suspect you would have been next." Alice turned away from him again, her eyes searching the shadows as if looking for someone.
"No," she whispered. "It's just me. No one else left."
"I think you might be in shock." Alice grinned, glancing off into the darkness again. Lombardo followed her gaze, expecting to see another alien, or perhaps even the Queen lunging out from behind the equipment. But there was still nothing. "Command," he called.
"We copy you, Lombardo,"
came Kennedy's reply. "Be advised. You might want to have Dylan on standby. I think she's suffered some emotional trauma."
"Copy that."
"Alice, can you look at me, please?" Slowly she turned back to him, still smiling. The expression made Lombardo shiver, but he didn't know why. "Alice, there's a transport waiting for us outside. All we have to do is reach it. So I want you to stick close to me, okay?" Shrugging, she nodded. "Do you know where the rest of the aliens went? Did you see them flee when I fired the grenade?"
"It's just me now."
"Okay." He paused, considering their options. Then he bent down, undid a Velcro strap on his multi-cam trousers, and pulled a combat knife from one of the 6 concealed pockets. He held the hilt out to her. "Here, take this." Nodding, she accepted the weapon without a word. Lombardo knew that if they encountered any more xenomorphs, the knife would be useless in actual combat. He hoped, however, that it would help the shell-shocked woman focus and give her the courage to follow him. He turned back to the hatchway. "Stay close behind me," he warned, "and be careful of the rubble in the maintenance tunnel. There's sharp metal, some of it hot, and there's little pools of acid on the walls and floor. Trust me, you don't want to step in those." If Alice understood him, she gave no indication. Sighing, Lombardo started forward, ducking through the doorway. After a moment, Alice followed along behind. He showed her where to step when they came to the blast site, and helped her navigate around the debris. Then he led her down the hall, and out into the main corridor. He paused, trying to remember which way he'd come. He'd been running at the time, gunning down xenomorphs before they could reach him. "Which way is the exit?" he finally asked, embarrassed. Alice pointed to the right.
"Don't you have people who could tell you? I heard you talking to them before."
"The atmospherics are messing with the equipment. Very hard for them to get a read on anything down here, other than communications."
"This way, then."
She stepped around him and started down the hallway. Lombardo grabbed her arm, noticing her wince in his grip. He eased up, surprised that he'd hurt her. He hadn't squeezed with that much force. "Sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you."
"It's okay. It's not your fault. I'm sick."
"Sick? Sick how?"
"Don't worry, it's nothing contagious. I've got cancer."
"Oh." He paused, unsure of how to respond. "I'm sorry to hear that." She shrugged.
"It's been killing humans pretty much since we crawled out of the oceans, right? We can travel galaxies, colonize planets, clone people, replace organs, download our consciousness. But we still haven't found a cure for cancer. I've made my peace with it."
"Is it... are you..."
"Yes, Lance Corporal. I'm afraid it's terminal."
"I'm really sorry."
"I'm sorry, too. Sorry you went through all this trouble to save a dying woman."
"Well," Lombardo said, starting forward again, "you're not dead yet, Alice, and you're not dying on my watch. Just let me take the lead, okay? If we come across more aliens, I don't want to accidentally shoot you."
"We won't."
Her tone was matter-of-fact.
"They've all pulled back now."
Lombardo frowned. "How do you know that for sure?" Alice smiled sadly.
"Because all the others hatched. The queen's in hiding now. They emptied the nest when you were approaching. The rest of the aliens will be guarding her now."
"But I saw an egg sac back there in the control room."
"She had already detached from it. She'll grow a new one and start the whole process over again. But that will take time."
"Well, it's time she's not going to have." He paused at the next corner they came to, and peered anxiously around the wall. The corridor was clear. He led her onward. "Do you have any family you want us to contact? I can radio my command."
"No," Alice replied. "There's nobody. I'm alone."
"No partner? Kids?"
"I had a daughter. She died."
"I'm sorry."
"It was a long time ago. She was stillborn. I carried her for 9 months and everything was fine. She was alive. We watched her on the monitors. But during the birth, she didn't survive. I thought about having another when the time was right. But then I ended up here and, well, you know the rest."
Lombardo bit his lip, unsure of what to say. What the hell could he have said? What possible words did he have to console her? She'd been captured by aliens, seen all of her friends and co-workers die, was dying herself of terminal fucking cancer, and to top everything off, had lost her only child.
He paused at another corner and glanced both ways. A stenciled arrow on the wall pointed to the cafeteria.
"I came from that direction. Is there a closer way to the exit?"
"Yes. Turn to the left."
Lombardo followed her instructions and continued down the dark hallway. The only sounds were their footsteps and their breathing.
He glanced at the LCD display on the side of his rifle, checking to see how many rounds were left and how much battery life remained.
Heimbuch had always covered his readout with black electrical tape so that snipers couldn't focus in on the glowing screen. But Lombardo had never done that, preferring instead to know his weapon's status at all times. Satisfied with his findings, he used the manual cocking handle, making sure a round was chambered. He knew that psychologically he was only doing these things to stay focused, but it made him feel better. The same effect he'd hoped the combat knife would have on Alice. At the next crossway, he saw a red sign glowing in the dark. It marked the exit. Lombardo sighed with relief.
"See?" Alice said. "I told you it wasn't far."
"It can't be this easy," he murmured. "Would they really just let us go?"
"They're not following,"
Alice replied.
Lombardo shuffled toward the exit. "But how can you know that for sure?"
"Because they sent me instead."
He paused and was about to turn around when he felt something cold against his throat. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw a metallic flash. Then it was gone. Suddenly there was pain, and his neck felt hot and sticky. He heard a sound like gurgling water. Stumbling, he slammed into the wall and glanced at Alice. She clutched the combat knife in one hand. The blade was red with blood.
"That's my blood," he realized.
"This was my last chance,"
Alice told him.
"Don't you see? The Queen, she's smarter than the rest of them. She understood my intent. I wanted to be a mother again before I died. I wanted to feel it one more time. That life kicking and growing inside of me. It was perfect."
Lombardo tried to raise his pulse rifle, but the weapon felt as heavy as stone. Instead, he let it slip from his fingers and brought his hands to his throat. He moaned as his fingers grew wet.
"You," he rasped. "You, what?"
"I was happy."
Alice's smile turned to a scowl.
"But then you had to come along and ruin things. You had to mess everything up."
Sputtering, Lombardo tried to talk. It was starting to feel very cold. He slumped against the wall, sliding downward, staring at her in disbelief.
"I won't let them take my baby," Alice said. "And I had to stop you from leaving here. I had to protect them, you see?"
Lombardo fumbled at the floor, blood-slicked fingers clawing, trying to grab his rifle. When he looked up again, Alice had knelt beside him with the knife. She started to speak, but then gasped softly as if in pain. Her eyes glazed for a moment, and when she turned back to him again, her expression was rapturous.
"It won't be long now," she said, patting her chest.
He stared, eyes wide, as her shirt bulged just below her breasts. He was dead before the birthing pains began.
Darkness Falls by Heather Graham. You didn't hear the screams. The words seemed to fall on the sunlit day like a sure and steady sweep of ice. Angela Hall didn't look at the tall, intense man who spoke them. She had been working in her garden, proud of the amazing tomatoes she was managing to grow. She had, in fact, just bit into one, adding a touch of salt from the small shaker in her belt. It was delicious. So good. Such a miracle. She shoved her trowel into the ground and stood, dusting her hands together and staring up at the sky. It was so beautiful. "Did you hear me? I can play the security footage for you." Angela still failed to react. She couldn't. She couldn't let go of the terra-farmed earth and the sky, blue with just wisps of clouds, glorious and unbelievable. It was a created world. Planet Oleta in the Upsilon Trident had proven to be a true oasis of welcoming hospitality in an area of the Andromeda Galaxy most people had considered to be completely uninhabitable. It was also so far removed from most known civilizations that, at the moment, it was a pristine and wonderful place to live. Silver mining was the main occupation on Oleta. Angela wasn't a miner. She was a farmer, with degrees in agriculture and animal husbandry. But she had always liked miners. She had come across them often enough when she'd been captain in the Colonial Marines, a part of her life she had worked hard to put behind her. She wanted it to stay that way. She had told no one here about her experiences, where she had been in her life, what she had been, or what she had done. But this man, Police Chief Warwick Tarleton, apparently knew, because he had come here, to her, with his fantastic tale. "Did you hear me?" Tarleton asked quietly. "If not, hear this." He stretched his hand, forcing her to see the screen on his communicator. She tried not to look. There wasn't much to see, she thought. Darkness and shadows, and then a splatter of crimson on the lens, something flying, limbs. And the screams of the dying that didn't end until the crimson flooded the lens, and the dying were the dead. She turned to stare at him, feeling as ravaged as the flesh of the victims in the caves. "Yes, Captain Hall, they opened a new silver mine. There were opening ceremonies, a picnic, bands, and then screams. Four dead were discovered in the newly opened shaft. Two children are missing. I'm not Captain Hall anymore." So, some other company idiot thought he could create a weapon and smuggled eggs onto this planet. When will we ever become a race without assholes as dangerous as the beasts? Her voice was a monotone. "You need to call in the soldiers. You need the military authorities to handle this, if it can be handled. I can't help you. No one knows who I am." No one knew. Not being a Marine was part of her beautiful new world. "I've called the soldiers. They're coming," Tarleton said, staring at her so intently that she wanted to scream. "The thing is, the recruits out here are raw. They've never had to face anything like what we saw on the surveillance tapes. There are no experts who know how to handle this. What you have to understand is that there are two children down there." I can't help you," Angela whispered. "And I am probably telling the truth. I will never forget Planet 8 in Star Magnolia in the Milky Way galaxy. That was where we'd come across the xenomorphs, the one who had used the Condor Dragon reptilians for their gestation, the creatures that ripped my company to shreds, consumed them alive, one by one. I was powerless, caught in the rocks, watching while they'd taken Daniel, torn into him. Just seeing the surveillance tapes brought back the fear, paralyzing fear." "Okay, you're under arrest," Tarleton said. "What?" "You don't want to volunteer your services? You can just come with me anyway. You're under arrest."
"For what?"
"Failure to cooperate in a criminal investigation."
"That's not even a legitimate charge."
"It is now," Tarleton assured her grimly. "You're it. You're all that I've got. You survived the Chondromorph attack on your platoon. You're the only survivor. You killed a queen." Because I'd been desperate. I hadn't thought. I'd run, and I'd hidden myself, and somehow, yes, I'd survived, when no one else had been left even recognizable as a human being. He lifted an arm, indicating his hover car. She looked up at the beautiful sky once again. Man created such wonders. Technology had taken a barren piece of rock like Oleta and turned it into a haven. Man was also capable of gross stupidity. Someone had somehow brought alien eggs, xenomorph eggs, to the planet. Someone somehow determined that they would create a workforce or a weapon, something magnificent, where others had failed. They just never got it. And maybe she was destined to never get away from the beasts. All I could see on your comm was shadows, she said, after taking a seat in the passenger side of the bubble-shaped vehicle. I realize that silver is the main substance being mined for here, but I understand they're also mining for precious gems and rock salt. I haven't been involved in any of the mining operations. Which mine?
Silver mine, Tarleton said briefly. He glanced over at her. Does it matter?
Everything matters, she said. I need to see the footage again, she said. He passed her the communicator. She studied it briefly, then hit in the proper place to roll the footage again. She forced herself to stare at the screen. What are the indigenous life forms in the mine? Are there any? The planet was a barren rock, by my understanding, when they started the terraforming and oxygenation. Tarleton looked over at her. She'd met him a few times before. She liked him. He didn't talk too much. He was a big man, tall and muscular, with dark red hair and steady blue eyes. While the military controlled the mines, Tarleton was head of the civilian police.
You're quite right. There are no indigenous creatures in the mine.
Wincing, Angela played the footage again. She watched the shadows. Whatever had cast them on the walls of the cave seemed to have a multitude of arms. There was some life form in the cave, she said. At best, someone managed to smuggle in eggs, but that's only the first stage for these beings. There had to be a host. We know that the host can be human, or just about any kind of creature found on any planet. But the creatures must have a host. She looked at him, frowning. Why have you come for me? This happened at the mine.
Yes.
That's a military jurisdiction from the get-go, she said.
Yes.
Then...
They're assholes, Tarleton said flatly.
But they're...
Headed by Lieutenant Colonel Simon Nicholson. Nicholson came from a posh military school, never saw any action in the field whatsoever. He was assigned here because his family has an interest in the mines. He's claiming that the personnel down there went crazy because some kind of gas slipped into the oxygen system. He says we're just seeing them tear each other apart.
Angela looked at him incredulously. So Simon Nicholson is in charge here, with dozens of colonial marines at his beck and call. They'll go in. They'll find out what really happened.
You know what really happened.
They'd reached the mine. Tarleton parked and jumped out of the hover car. Angela followed. The remnants of a band shell remained, along with barbecue pits, picnic baskets, and more. But the revelers were gone. Men and women in their military apparel hurried about, gathering weapons, lining up. There was a command station set up between two large military trucks. Tarleton was heading that way. Angela hurried after him. The first man she saw was young, perhaps in his mid-twenties. He had a wide-eyed look of panic about him, but he was doing his best to provide a blustering authority.
Alpha Company, stairs to the second level down. Betas will take the elevators. These are, we believe, our own people under the influence of a mind-altering substance. Take care. Preserve life at all costs. That includes your own lives.
Yes, sir.
The company captains, one a young woman of about 20, the other a man who might have been just a few years older, acknowledged the order, adjusting gas masks over their faces.
What are you doing? Tarleton asked.
My job, Nicholson said.
Our people are dead, Nicholson. What are you, an idiot? There is no gas. There are creatures down there.
Nicholson appeared as if he was about to explode.
How dare you, Tarleton! Arrest him!
He told one of his men.
Like hell. I'm chief of police.
Civilian police?
This isn't a military operation, Tarleton began.
It is now,
Nicholson said, quickly cutting him off.
I'm declaring martial law. Times of need.
Lieutenant Colonel Nicholson, Angela said quickly. She'd been military long enough to know that rich boys who went to academies and came out officers would die, or let just about anyone else die, before they'd let their college-earned titles be ignored. She even managed a smile.
Sir,
I'm Angela Hall, retired military, and I...
Yes, I know about you, Miss Hall. Everybody knows who you are. Ex-fighter. Thank you for coming by, but you're no longer in the military, and this isn't a xenomorph situation.
He was studying a map of the mine. He barely looked up.
I beg to differ, sir. If you'll look at the footage you have...
I can place you under military arrest as well, Nicholson said curtly.
Then it started again. The screaming. Commanders calling out to one another, screaming, screaming, screaming. Blood splaying over a lens until the viewers were blinded again. Blinded by a sea of crimson blood.
Next units, Nicholson shouted. Be alert!
Marines scrambled and hurried over to the opening to the cave, all adjusting their gas masks.
Asses, Tarleton exclaimed, hurrying over to join the Marines.
Stop that idiot,
Nicholson said, snapping out the order to those soldiers. They rushed after Tarleton. Too late. The man had pushed his way past the Marines and into the caves.
Let him rush in ahead and get himself killed,
Nicholson muttered. He shook his head.
Where are the air guys? The scientists are supposed to be here. If they just get the contamination under control.
Sir.
One of the men standing by him seemed uneasy.
Sir. They whisper in town about these caves, about the noises they've heard from around here. People do believe that there's some kind of creature down there.
Joe, stop. Just because you're my cousin, you have no right to test my authority.
But Simon.
Shut up. Hey, who's a Marine? Hurrah, hurrah,
Nicholson said. Men and women with their masks obeyed. It didn't seem to Angela that they moved as quickly as they had before.
Lieutenant Colonel, Angela began.
There is no xenomorph, Nicholson snapped. You need hosts. This was a barren rock.
At his side, Joe cleared his throat. Angela stared at him, frowning. Cousin Joe looked terrified.
Watch those people die, Angela said quietly.
There is some kind of xenomorph down in the caves. Nicholson looked up at her impatiently.
I'm trying to pay you respect for past service, Miss Hall. You were a Marine. You survived a lot. But you need to clear out and let me handle this situation. The government assured us that the last of the xenomorphs were destroyed more than a year ago. They can't be on this planet. Terraforming was just begun in the last century. There's no way that a xenomorph could be on this planet.
There are children down there, Angela said. She inhaled and caught her breath. Tarleton had run into the caves. He was probably as dead as the others. Except Tarleton knows that they had a xenomorph situation. Nicholson was telling her to leave.
I can run. I don't have to be here. I don't have to face this nightmare again.
There were children in the caves. There was no running. Depending on the xenomorphs, they could kill every single Marine on the planet, and then finish off the civilians.
Simon, Joe said hesitantly.
Lieutenant Colonel,
Simon Nicholson reminded him angrily.
Sir.
What? What the hell is it?
Nicholson said. Joe lowered his voice.
I heard your dad talking.
He glanced at Angela nervously.
He believes that it was too easy to get into the mines, as if the tunnels had been gouged out by something that was non-mechanical and non-human. He thinks that the company arranged for giant blue moon centipedes to be brought here, just as the planet was oxygenated.
Angela felt as if a cold wave washed over her. She couldn't believe it. She couldn't believe that anyone, even the most gung-ho and ambitious company man or woman out there, would arrange for giant blue moon centipedes and xenomorph eggs to be brought to the same place.
Blue moon centipedes? As xenomorph hosts?
Oh, God, help us, for we will need divine intervention, Angela said.
No, no, they wouldn't have brought giant centipedes here,
Nicholson said. But he didn't appear to believe his own words. Yes, blue moon centipedes might have been brought here. They were incredible tunnel makers, better than any digging equipment known. Nicholson spun around suddenly to accost someone. Angela saw a man she hadn't seen before that day, and yet had seen dozens of times before. Because he wasn't a man, of course. He was an android,
one called Tommy II, the newest model. They'd had one as their science officer when she'd last encountered xenomorphs.
Did the company bring eggs here? Centipedes? Nicholson asked.
No, not that I know about. I am not. My programming, after events in the past, is now set to prevent me from lying, the android said.
Centipedes. I can only imagine, Angela said.
Screams sounded again, Nicholson's third round of marines. Angela couldn't help but stare at the screen. Body parts flew. She saw the shadows of what looked like great alien arms, 100 of them, from a genetic splash between a centipede and an alien. There was a sudden flare of luminescence, someone's flashlight shooting a huge arch. That was when she saw the child, the little girl hunched beneath an overhang of rock. She was just standing there, staring, in shock, screaming. Chief of Police Tarleton suddenly appeared, making a beeline for the girl. He caught her and flew down behind one of the ragged boulders that lay to either side of the dugout silver mine tunnel. The light went out. She couldn't tell if the little girl and Tarleton had made it or not. Angela winced and looked back at Nicholson.
Listen to me, Nicholson, and brighten up. I don't care what you say. You have xenomorphs, hybrids that gestated in giant blue moon centipedes. You can take them out with a nuclear weapon, probably destroy this planet, but if you don't kill them now, this planet will be destroyed anyway. There will be no one left alive on it. You can tell your men to quit with the gas masks. You don't need them. You do need greater firepower, flamethrowers. And don't send in small units, one by one. We need a whole row of Marines going in at once, firing at once with automatic weapons and the flamethrowers. The children, bless them, have survived somehow. You can see the little girl hiding behind one of the rocks.
Nicholson just stood there, staring at her. Angela let out an oath of impatience.
What happened to Hurrah? She demanded.
You don't know what you're talking about, Nicholson said.
He is either incredibly stupid or in shock. They obviously hadn't taught real-world blood and guts at his fancy school, she thought. She let out an oath of impatience. He wasn't going to listen to her. She spun around and headed for one of the trucks. Luckily, weaponry hadn't changed much since she'd left the Corps. She found what had been branded as the Woolly Mammoth, a flamethrower with a power and distance that was formidable. Enough to take down giant centipede xenomorphs? I don't know. But maybe I could at least get the child and get out and... She wasn't alone. The android, Tommy II, had followed her. She looked at him suspiciously.
I can't lie, and I can't kill, he assured her.
Then you're a hell of a lot different from some of your predecessors, she said.
I'm different, he swore.
She didn't know whether to believe him or not. But then she didn't know if she'd come out of the caves or not. She'd seen the little girl. There was no running, except for into the cave, bearing her weapon. She turned and she ran, heading in, the android behind her. At the mouth of the cave she stopped. The android was next to her, and as she paused, looking at the entrance and the stairs that had been cut into the earth and the elevator shaft, she saw that she had been joined by 3 Marines as well, almost the size unit of the company she had lost so recently. She nodded briefly to them and spoke softly.
They can be very different, these xenomorphs, as we know, depending on the host, giant centipedes in this case, and whatever genetic interference might have taken place at the facehugger stage. One thing to remember, what they bleed is usually acidic. And they'll have an inner mouth, and it's the inner mouth that will be the most dangerous. Imagine the worst of what you've learned in a creature with 100 or so legs. Watch out. And you'll probably have the mouth and the forcibles, what really bites in a centipede. They saluted her, one short-haired, heavily muscled young woman, and the 2 men at her side.
No elevator. We stand together.
Yes, ma'am, one of the Marines said.
Creating a flank, they headed down the stairs. Angela saw the first movement of a foot. She froze for a moment. It was worse than she had imagined. The legs were long,
The creatures were long. She saw three of them. They had the huge, elongated head and mouth.